So my research is both, you know, has been among, for this book in particular, both doctors, you know, health activists who are professionals and health activists who are, you know, lay experts or lay people. It's partly, it's less the health piece, but it's more just the fact that there are activists that have led to criminalization and mass incarceration being significant parts of their lives. So, you know, as I said, I write about the Black Panther Party. And, you know, as we know from, you know, the historical record, as we know from, you know, news media and the like, I mean, the federal government, the U.S. government, made it its mission to really decimate the Black Panther Party's ranks. And the counterintelligence program, or COINTELPRO, went about the work of decimating the ranks of the Black Panther Party and really just diminishing their spirit, really, through many means. So they, you know, planted news stories and they shaped kind of public perception about the party. So one of the things that people often ask me is like, why haven't we heard any of this stuff about the Black Panther Party's health activism? And, you know, one of the answers I suggest is that COINTELPRO was successful in shaping the media frame around the Panthers, even for those who might have been sympathetic, right? So they've really, so that the sort of federal work of framing, the federal government's work of framing the party also did the work of shaping our national memory of them. So there's that piece, but part of it was also that they, you know, under the banner of, you know, then Governor Reagan being a law and order governor and a kind of backlash to the activism of the 60s, you know, there was this kind of effectively war on activists, although it was never named. You know, we had the war on cancer at this time and the war on poverty, but there was certainly also a war on activists. And so this meant that many of the people who were involved in the Black Panther Party and other activist organizations from this time went to jail on trumped up charges or went to jail perhaps on legitimate charges, but served or continue to serve disproportionate sentences. So, you know, people have been in jail, also in solitary confinement for, you know, crimes that they were convicted of in a legal process that's somewhat questionable, you know, for 30, 40 years. So, I mean, one of the legacies of the Black Panther Party and the way the state responded is, you know, happens in this cauldron of the sort of expansion of mass incarceration and the criminalization of activism as an excuse for doing that. And just to give you an example of how things have changed in the last 44 decades or so, you know, the party, the activists that I write about, you know, would basically set up sort of storefront health clinics, for example, or they would set up the headquarters of Black Panther offices at storefronts and, you know, these sorts of things. And you know, people ask me now, you know, well, could they do this now? And the only kind of, you know, legacy of this work that was able to continue on in the same way, although there's lots of legacies of the Black Panther's health activism, is the Common Ground Health Clinic that springs up after Hurricane Katrina. And, you know, I argue that the only reason it was even able to happen is because the entire kind of healthcare and criminal justice infrastructure of the city had completely collapsed. So the Common Ground Health Clinic is started by a former Black Panther and a nurse and another activist 3 days after Hurricane Katrina comes through. But within 6 months, the Common Ground Health Collective had become an NGO. It was a lot of pressure from both state and federal agencies for them to get licensing and these sorts of things. So for the most part, the Black Panther health activism that I wrote and write about didn't have this, you know, they worked outside of, and in fact, they said that they were working against the grain of, you know, existing kind of public health authorities. So they actually resisted and rejected any efforts to, you know, for them, for the most part, to get licensing and accreditation from kind of local or state entities. And this was certainly the place in Chicago where, you know, there was a series of lawsuits that were trying to get the Black Panthers to to basically, you know, go to be under the kind of auspices of the public health authority in that city. So, but what happens now, you know, so the Hurricane Katrina Common Ground Collective Clinic is I think, anomalous because Hurricane Katrina, a natural and unnatural disaster, was a bit anomalous. You couldn't pull this work off today because if you open a storefront clinic, it would be shut down by police authorities in a day or two. I don't think you would could make a go of it. And I think, you know, one of the enduring legacies of this criminalization of activism is just to look at activism at a place in New York City today. So, you know, I participated, for example, last March, and our colleague Jesse Daniels was there as well. I was there with her in the silent march against stop and frisk practices in New York City, and that was up and down along parts of Fifth Avenue. But in order to pull off that march, the activists had to go to City Hall. They had to file a permit. They had to get permission from the state. They had to tell, you know, the mayor's office or the police department between which blocks they would walk on Fifth Avenue. They had to tell the mayor's office and the police department, you know, at which time the protest would take place. And so that creates a different kind of activism. I mean, could you imagine if during the civil rights movement you had to go to the police, you had to go to Bull Connor, you know, a notorious racist police officer, and tell him, you know, that you're going to do a sit-in and between these days, or you're going to hold a march at this time between these days, it would have been impossible. But because activism and the groups that the work, you know, one of the responses, the kind of backlash to the populations, the act of activists that I study in the 60s and 70s has been this criminalization of activism. We no longer can even really imagine kind of organic activism with the, you know, accepting kind of the Occupy movement of recent years.